Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on crime is a growth industry when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? That bonds are the exact opposite to private property, and public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights? Permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, your property from these incessant attacks by government agencies and agents like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, zoning and planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have as citizens between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about the growth industry crime has become in America. We have now in this country turned everyday garden variety acts into crimes. That's right. You know, time was when a kid walked into a store and bought a pack of cigarettes, that was not a crime. We've criminalized it now. And if you're a clerk working in the 7-Eleven store and you fail to ID somebody, and he comes in and he buys a pack of cigarettes, and the cop catches you, they're going to prosecute you and put you in jail or fine you. And that's an act that wasn't a crime. Now, I'll go along with you. You say, well, we shouldn't be selling cigarettes to 10-year-old kids. Well, okay, why not? In 1900, we were selling cigarettes to 10-year-old kids, and the nation didn't disintegrate, and life went on. Now, should 10-year-old kids smoke? No, and neither should 50-year-old kids smoke. Smoking is bad for your health. Smoking is a bad policy. Smoking isn't good for you. I would agree with you. But then, do I want to run around and police everybody and punish them for their bad choices in life? I think drugs are bad. I think drugs are bad for people. Drugs kill people. The practice of using drugs is witchcraft. It's prohibited in the Bible, for crying out loud. But I don't want to spend any money running around criminalizing drug taking. For instance, there was a product on the market here the other day. It was just recalled. It was called Vioxx. And there was a woman by the name of Hamill. She was a skating star, and she'd get up, and she had a bunch of kids, And she'd skate around a little bit, and she'd come back and say, if I didn't have my Vioxx, I wouldn't be out here skating every morning. See? And this went on for a while, and then one day they woke up and discovered that Vioxx was killing people at a higher rate than if they didn't take it, and so they took it off the market. Now, that Vioxx was a bad product, and it killed a lot of people. But it wasn't illegal. It was a legal drug. It was put out by Merck. Now, these legal drugs kill 130,000 people a year. You know, your doctor, he prescribes Vioxx, and there's been a lot of these drugs. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Hell, I've reported on, probably 10 drugs over the years that have killed people in excess of 50,000. And then books are written later on, you know, about how this drug has killed all these people. These are the legal drugs. And people, when they think about drugs and drug taking, they think about illegal drugs. They think about heroin and cocaine and marijuana and so on. Did you know that there was a time in America when marijuana was not illegal? I mean, hell, you could just go out, you could grow it in your backyard. You could buy and sell and trade it freely on the open market. And when marijuana was legal, we didn't have any drug czar or drug war, and we didn't have any drug problem. Well, if we had a drug problem, I don't know that anybody knew what the hell it was. And then one day somebody woke up and said, you know, this smoking dope is bad for people, and it probably is. I wouldn't argue with you. Probably just as bad as smoking cool cigarettes. But we didn't think that we needed to go out and change everybody's behavior. Now, we have criminalized ordinary everyday garden variety acts like buckling your seatbelt. Hell, did you know that there was a time in America when we didn't even have seatbelts in the car? I can remember when I was a little kid, we didn't even have a seatbelt in the car. And life went on without seatbelts. Now somebody's going to say, but a lot of people got killed. So what? What the hell business is out of yours? You know, if you Americans could keep your nose out of other people's business, it would save you a lot of money. Give you a lot more time to spend on doing things that are more constructive. But Americans can't do that. And so we have to be buttoned into everybody else's business. If we see somebody out here doing something that we don't approve of, we need a law to ban that activity. So when people were smoking, those of us that don't smoke. Now, I used to be a smoker, so if you're a smoker, bear in mind that I understand smoking. I used to smoke for 9 years, so I'm fully aware of how it works. I can light up in the morning if I want. But I looked at it, and I said, my dad smokes, my mom smokes, my granny smokes, my grandpa smokes, my Uncle Lyle smokes, my Uncle Carol smokes, my Aunt Dorothy smokes. The only one that didn't smoke that I know of was my Aunt Bessie. She was an Advent. Everybody else smoked. So when I got to be 12 years old, I thought, well, I should probably smoke. So I started smoking. At first, I only smoked a little bit, and so I just stole them from Mom and Dad. I was smoking my mother's Herbert Terrington's and my daddy's Cools. I didn't care much for those Cools. And then one of my buddies, my pimply-faced punk buddies, he offered me a Camel. I said, wow, that Camel cigarette, that's a better one. So I switched to Camel. So from the time I was about 12 years old until I was 23, I believe it was, or something like that, I smoked, and I smoked Camel cigarettes. It might have been against the law to sell me Camel cigarettes across the counter, but we bought them out of a vending machine most of the time, and we didn't put people in jail for selling me Camel cigarettes. And one day I woke up and I said, smoking's bad for me, so I'm going to quit, and I did. And I'm probably better off for it. But to my knowledge, we didn't put anybody in jail for selling me Camel cigarette. Now, today, if I was, you know, the same 12-year-old pimply-faced punk that I was years ago, and somebody sold me a pack of Camels, they want to lock that guy up. So I just wanted to ask you, did you really want to pay $56 a day to lock up the clerk in the 7-Eleven store for selling a pack of cigarettes to a pimply-faced punk kid that's going to get those cigarettes whether the guy in the 7-Eleven store sells them to him or not? That's not relevant. Let me assure you, boys and girls, it's against the law to smoke marijuana. There is no shortage of marijuana in the United States of America. It is the biggest dollar-producing crop in the nation. It is a bigger dollar producer than wheat, corn, beans, and cotton. Did you understand that? No shortage? Now, it's pricey. It costs more than a pack of Marlboros, but if you wanted to go after somebody and put them in jail, I can't think of a better guy to go after than the marijuana grower. All right, now that you've criminalized this activity, which prior to 1937 wasn't a crime, you're now able to spend billions and billions of dollars a year putting people in jail. Let me show you how much you're spending. Half the people that are locked up today are locked up for illegal drug use. Not just marijuana, but, you know, all this illegal drug use. Now, think about this pragmatically. You're not opposed to me going down to the drugstore and then spending money on Vioxx. But you're against me if I go down to the street corner and buy some cocaine. Can you explain to me why? Can you tell me why you want me to use Vioxx, which we know kills people, and Merck pulled it from the market? And why you're against me smoking marijuana? Now, this isn't a program to justify drugs. All these drugs are illegal, but the illegal drugs kill 6,000 people a year. So the people that are shooting up with heroin and cocaine and marijuana and all these illegal drugs and ecstasy and whatever these things are, it kills 6,000 a year. All right? That's bad. And we're spending billions and billions of dollars a year to eradicate it from America. Well, that's what they tell us. All right. Now, we're not trying to eradicate Vioxx and all the legal drugs, which kill 130,000 a year. See how many times more that is? That's about 20 times. So if you take 130 and divide that by 6, yeah, we kill nearly 22 times more people with legal drugs than illegal drugs. So if you're opposed to drugs because it's dangerous and kills people, well, wouldn't you want to eliminate the drugs that kill 22 times more than cocaine? Let's try it this way. Now, let's suppose that we went back to 1920, before we had any criminal laws against drugs at all. None. Zero. Zilch. Was life in America intolerable in 1920? I mean, had we gotten to a level of conduct in this country that we just couldn't stand each other and we had to have these drug laws to save the nation? I never heard of anybody, one of the old-timers I ever talked to, that said drug use, not illegal, because it wasn't illegal. Now, I never heard any of the old-timers say marijuana, cocaine, and heroin use in 1920 was so obnoxious that we had to take action to save the republic. I never heard that from anybody. Now, I listen to that crap today. I listen to politicians say, my God, we got to save America by stamping out drug use. Well, the real purpose for these crimes against drugs is this. See, a lot of well-meaning people back around the turn of the century, this is 1900, they took a look at alcoholism and they said, my God, this alcoholism is really bad. Boys and girls, people around the world have been drinking alcoholic beverages for at least 5,000 years. Hell, Noah, the day after he got off the boat, got drunk. Wasn't exactly the day he got off the boat, but, you know, short time thereafter, he went out and planted a vineyard and started drinking. You know, as soon as he could get some grapes and get them fermented in the sun, he was out drinking wine, and he got drunk. And that's recorded in the Bible. And the Bible says, and for all you religious guys out there, wine is raging and strong drink is a mocker. And yeah, okay. And no drunkard shall enter into the kingdom of heaven. I heard that story too. But that all well being the case, and if you're a teetotaler and Baptist, that's fine by me. I'm not sitting here saying you need to go out and drink. What I'm asking is, what in the hell business is it of yours if this guy down the street wants to go drink? And so somebody says, well, it's a great cost on society. But how did criminalizing the use of alcohol change anything? It's always been that way. And since it's always been that way, it didn't cost us anything before we decided we wanted to enact prohibition. So we got up on our high horse and we said, well, we're going to criminalize this activity of drinking. So they went out and it was really funny. They did some footage on this, you know, and there's guys running around with axes and they're busting open beer kegs. And the beer is flowing down the gutters and down the sewers and just polluting the bay and killing the fish, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, they came along with us, and then we started putting people in jail for it, you know. And then all that did was create a new industry, which was called the illegal booze. It brought in organized crime to supply the need, and that organized crime is in here supplying the need for heroin and cocaine and marijuana, and you have drugs and drug wars. I mean, you have the same problem today with drugs that you had with alcohol, with Al Capone and the boys in Chicago in 1930. Anytime you criminalize an activity, if you want to test it, let me show you. Why don't you prohibit tobacco, just like you do marijuana? Just absolutely illegal. Why don't we start locking people up for 5-10 years for smoking Camel cigarettes? And do you know what that's going to do? Same thing it did with marijuana. Now, the reason for criminalizing marijuana in 1937 was because the Roosevelt administration had legalized, they repealed the Volstead Act, and they legalized alcohol. So the alcohol distillers, you know, the Jack Daniels people and the Four Roses people, took a look and said, in the period between 1920 and 1934, in that 14 years, people have moved dramatically from intoxicating alcohol to intoxicating marijuana. Poor people, they couldn't afford to go to the speakeasies and pay the high prices for alcohol, so they just went to smoking marijuana. So the distillers went to Congress and said, we need to outlaw marijuana. And so they did. That was to bring people back to drinking beer and alcohol again, which it did. But in the meantime, the hippies, they picked up on this in the 1950s, and they said, hey, this smoking dope is a pretty good idea, so we think we'll do it. So then we started locking them up in jail. And I pointed out to you, you know, every time you lock somebody up in jail, it costs $56 a day, $20,000 a year to lock somebody up in jail. That's the average price. By the time you get serious and you lock these people up in prison, it costs hundreds of dollars a day. But if you count your county jail and city jail and the federal jails and so on, $56 a day. Now, I went back to the Justice Policy Institute, the Punishing Decade, Prison and Jail Estimates at the Millennium. As the century draws to a close, we can safely predict that America will end the 1990s by having put more people behind bars than in any other decade in our history. Throughout most of the century prior to 1980, the incarceration rate and the raw number of people behind bars has risen and fallen with wars, depressions, economic booms and busts, as well as with the rise and fall of the crime rate. But as the following charts illustrate, the last 30 years, and particularly the last decade, have witnessed the kind of huge jumps in prison commitments that bear no historical comparison. As the doors to new cell blocks opened, the number of prisoners and jail inmates soared in good times and in bad times, independent of whether the crime rate rose or fell. As this new analysis by the Washington, D.C.-based Justice Policy Institute shows, in a few short months, America will begin the new millennium with 2 million of its citizens in prison and jail. So in the year 2000, we started the new millennium with 2 million people in jail. Okay, we now have less than 2 million people farming. The price of food over the last 36 months has gone up 83%. That's right. It's rising faster than 25% a year. Now, in 1920, we had 50% of the people of America living out on the land. Roughly 40% of those would have been farmers producing our food and fiber. Nobody complained about the high cost of food or food going up 25% a year in 1920. And that's because we had so many people involved in agriculture. Then somebody woke up one day and said, this is bad public policy. We need universal education. We need to criminalize truancy. So they made it a law. If you don't send your kid to school, why we're gonna punish you. We're gonna put you in jail, we're gonna take your kid away from you, we're gonna fine you. Well, let's take a look at this for a minute, because I can understand the value of education. I'm an educator. But I don't go so far as to say that everybody needs to be educated. I'm not sure that everybody really needs to be educated. In fact, I'm gonna make a wild statement here. I don't think most people need to be educated. I don't believe that for a minute. You know, the world's been here for 5,000 years, and we didn't have public school here in this country 150 years ago. I mean, there's always been a bunch of do-gooders out there that have some agenda that they're promoting. It could be an agenda to outlaw marijuana, an outlaw cocaine, or outlaw Jack Daniel's whiskey, or to outlaw ignorance, or to outlaw people riding around without their seatbelts buckled. I mean, there's all these agendas out there, and I'm sitting here asking a question. Why do we care if people buckle their seatbelts, buckle their kids into their cars, smoke or drink? All of these activities are probably bad. You know, I would go so far as to say that if you're a person 65 years old and you're taking an average of 6 drugs, which the average senior, 65 years old, is now taking an average of 6 drugs, I think that's bad for people. And it kills 130,000 people a year. But, you know, we haven't gotten on the bandwagon and said, gee, let's lock up all the doctors and dentists and all of the pharmacists and all the people that are supplying these drugs and let's criminalize it and make it against the law. It's bad for these people. And they go out and kill themselves at a rate 21 times greater than the people who are smoking dope and cracking lines of crack. But we haven't made it a crime, and it isn't bothering me. Now, if you're an old man or an old lady and you're out taking drugs and you're killing yourself, and you kill yourself with these drugs, I really don't care. Just to be honest with you, I really don't care. It's a choice that you have to make, and you make it. And the doctor wants to sell drugs, and the pharmacist wants to sell drugs, and Merck wants to sell drugs, and you want to buy them. And so you go out and you buy the drugs, and you kill yourself at a rate 21 times greater than the guy that's taking crack cocaine. Now, let me put the shoe on the other foot, and then ask you, well, what in the hell do we want to put the guy that's over here taking crack cocaine in jail for? That costs us $56 a day to lock this jerk up because he wants to smoke dope. We don't care if this old lady kills herself with Vioxx, but we care if this long-haired hippie over here smokes dope. And I'm sitting here saying, what in the hell is that all about? So when the old lady kills herself with Vioxx, it doesn't cost me anything. But to lock up this hippie over here cost me $56 a day. So I looked at that and said, you know, I really don't care if that hippie kills himself or not. I didn't care if the old lady killed herself. Why would I care if that long-haired screwball over there kills himself? What relevance does that have to do with me? All right, I can carry that a step further. I think that you should wear your seatbelt. The highway patrolman thinks you should wear your seatbelt. The judge thinks you should wear your seatbelt. Hell, all of us are in agreement. You should wear your seatbelt. Only a damn dummy wouldn't put his seatbelt on. All right, now we're all in agreement. So why do we want to lock people up, fine them, and make a big bunch of dust driving down the road over here because this guy doesn't use his head and buckle his seatbelt? But we get real excited about it. And the highway patrolman, you know, he says, well, you got to buckle your seatbelt. It's the law. 50 years ago, there wasn't any law. And then we still had highway patrolling, didn't we? So why do we want people to buckle their seatbelts? Well, there's a group of people out there that are very knowledgeable. They're called the insurance industry. And they take careful studies and statistics and numbers. And they discovered that people who wear their seatbelts get hurt less frequently, and they don't get hurt as bad. So they figured if we could get everybody to wear their seatbelts, it would save us a lot of money. Hell, it would save you a lot of money if you wore your seatbelt. So they went to the legislatures and they said, we need seatbelts in the cars and we need to have laws to punish people for not wearing their seatbelts. These are what we call victimless crimes. Victimless crimes. They're economic crimes. They're crimes that benefit a small minority of people. A small minority of very vocal people go into the legislature and they say, look, drinking alcohol is bad for people's health. We need a constitutional amendment to abolish alcohol in America. And we did it. We experimented with it for about 15 years. It worked like a lead balloon. People are going to drink. And so you created this humongous underworld, this humongous crime industry with alcohol by prohibiting it back in the 1920s. And so as a result of that, we had a crime surge. And it probably helped in the drunks and the alcohol sector, but it created this huge, humongous law enforcement growth industry over here. And then the government took a look at that and they said, wow, look at this. Look at the money that we make off crime. And the people love it. Because if we're out here with Elliot Ness chasing down Al Capone, the people love it. And they'll pay for it. They'll buy it. Let's sell it. So now, you know, after the prohibition experience, they said, let's do it with drugs. And so now they have outlawed marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. And they have created a law enforcement crime industry that dwarfs the Volstead Act. We have crime. We have an underworld. We have killings and murders that just dwarfs anything Al Capone ever dreamed of. They bring illegal drugs over the Mexican border by the semi-truckload. I mean, Al Capone was running around in the streets of New York hauling booze in the trunks of cars. They were smuggling whiskey across the border from Canada in cars. And we created this great industry fighting alcohol. Well, the government picked up on that and said, geez, look what we can do now. So now take a look at drugs. I mean, it's in the billions of dollars. I don't know how big the drug industry is, the illegal drug industry, but it's humongous. I would bet you if the illegal drug business is less than $100 billion a year, I would be surprised. So we can get all of the crime that we're willing to pay for. I mean, that's what we're doing. We're taking, for instance, the other day I saw a little piece in the paper said, we want to criminalize people for talking on their cell phones while they're driving their cars. And I got to sit here and say, well, you know, you're probably right. Running around on the streets talking on your cell phone, maybe that's a bad idea. Maybe it's dangerous. Maybe it's. But honest to God, did you want to make a crime out of something like talking on your cell phone in the car? I mean, if we wanted to, we could make it a crime to pick your nose driving down the street if we put our minds to it. You know, a guy's driving down the street and he's picking his nose and the cop sees him, pulls him up and says, hey, you nose picking this, so, you know, we're going to put you in jail now, spend $56 a day because you're picking your nose in your car. If you want to criminalize, you know, life, you can do that. But my question is, what's the point? Now, your economy is going into recession. Your economy is ultimately going into depression. And it's going because we have abandoned the free marketplace and we have overregulated ourselves to the point that businesses are sending the jobs to China because we don't need to worry about the crime of polluting the air. We have turned, you know, smokestacks into criminal activities, and we're fining businesses for all kinds of things like OSHA and the EPA. They come around and then they find them. Pretty soon the businessman says, hell, let's move to Mexico. Let's just move our operation offshore where we don't have all of this governmental hassle. We don't have all this crime. And somebody's going to write me a letter now, and they're going to say, well, you're just promoting the destruction of the environment. Hell, you're destroying your environment every day with all your regulation. You haven't changed a thing. It's worse today than it was 25 years ago. You got 25,000 gun laws on the books. 100 years ago, you didn't have any. Now you got 25,000. Kill more people today with guns than you ever killed in the past. The gun registration, the gun legislation hasn't cured anything. Nothing. I wouldn't say that it made it worse, but it didn't do anything to make it better. And it costs you a lot of money in the process. So I always figured, look, why spend a lot of money to fail? You can just do absolutely nothing and fail, and it's a lot cheaper. Hang on, we'll be right back. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law Hour brings you, offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order one, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about crime in America is a growth industry. Hell, it's a growth industry worldwide. I pointed that out to you the other day. The reason crime grows in America by 5% a year is because that's what we're buying. That's what we're budgeting. That's what our chiefs of police and our politicians and the powers that be have budgeted into the program. Let me take you on a little tour here of a criminal industry over here called education. Now, it's against the law if you don't send your kid to public school till he's 16. We call it truancy. And we have criminalized ignorance in America. We came to the conclusion for some reason that being dumb was a crime, and so therefore we're gonna pass some laws here, and so we did. And we've got laws here in America that make it a crime to be dumb. So if you don't send your kid to public school, somebody's gonna come out and knock on your door, and they're gonna arrest you and take you downtown, and they're gonna prosecute you. And there was a fellow by the name of Jonas Yoder in a famous case called Yoder versus Wisconsin back in the 1970s. This guy Yoder was an Amish man. Now, the Amish people don't care a whole lot about education. Well, formal education. School book education. Sending your kid off to public school to teach your daughters how to be whores and your sons to be sodomites. They don't care much for it, and so they came to a conclusion that they'd educate their children up to the 8th grade, about 12, 14 years old, and then jerk them out of school and put them to work doing something constructive that means something to the Amish, like, you know, bucking bales and milking cows and fixing fence and doing those things that the Amish people do, which is called farming. The Amish people are farmers. I don't know of any Amish people that are paleontologists, archaeologists, zoologists, engineers, the truck drivers and things like that. They really don't care. They don't pass their driver's education test. I don't think there's a one of them there that could drive a motorcycle. Talk about ignorant people. These people are just totally out of it. So one day, anyway, this guy Yoder, he jerks his kids out of school, and up in the state of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin public school authorities saw this and they said, "My God, we can't have these Amish people jerking their kids out of the public school. We don't want that." So they, you know, came out and they arrested him and they jailed him and they did all these things that school people do to people that don't educate their kids and try to turn out dummies. And so the upshot of it was the case went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court was asking some questions just like I am right now. Why is it in the national interest to lock up an Amish guy because he jerks his kid out of school at the end of the 8th grade? Why do we even care? You know, other than we got a big nose and we believe in education. See, because you and I believe education's good. Now, I'm an educator. I run a school. I run a law school. And I need students. And I'm really in favor of compulsory law school education. I think Congress should pass a law that requires everybody to have a law school education. You can choose what law school you want to go to. How's that for a deal, huh? Now, that's going to promote people, you know, if you don't go to law school, we're going to sentence you to prison for 5 years. If you don't carry your proof of law school education in your wallet at all times, you know, we're going to lock you up, fine you, punish you. You know, I think that's a hell of a good law. Now, that's because I have a financial interest in the law school industry. So can you see why I would sit here and say, I think we need to put you in prison because you don't have a law school degree. You haven't been to law school. And so educators can see all kinds of good reasons why we should lock Amish people up because they don't send their kids to school. Because they have a financial interest in the outcome. Let's just grow up and smell the coffee. Wake up! Smell the coffee. So public school officials, public school teachers, people that are making their livings off of the education system can see all kinds of good reasons why people should be educated. People should go to school. Hell, I wouldn't even deny it. I think school's a great idea. I think education's a wonderful plan. What I'm questioning is, why should we criminalize the fools that don't want to be educated? Let's take a look at a couple. Have you ever heard of a guy named Henry Ford? Henry Ford, you know, the guy that made the Ford car company, that invented the Ford car. Okay, the guy only went to school to the 6th grade. In today's environment, his parents would be jailed because they didn't send him at least until he's 16 years old. You know, he'd have to go until he was a sophomore in high school today. Henry Ford. Now, Henry Ford did all right by himself. In 1930, you know, he was making around $30 million a year. That was Franklin D. Roosevelt complained about that, and he made a big campaign issue out of it. He said, "Did you know Henry Ford made $30 million bucks in 1930 while you were out selling apples for a nickel?" Got elected president by doing that. And this guy, Henry Ford, only went to the sixth grade, which illustrates a very valuable point. Not everybody has to go to school to get a PhD or an MBA to be a success in life. Boys and girls, there have been businessmen running around America and running around the world that never spent a day in college, made a lot of money. There's another guy, pretty successful guy. His name was Thomas Edison, and he only went to school to the third grade, and he had 1,200 patents and made millions and millions and millions of dollars. And then there's my old mentor, Frank Rocha, you know, the young fellow that came to America in 1922, never had a pair of shoes till he was 17 years old, came from the Azores, didn't even speak the language, for crying out loud, never spent a day in school, couldn't write his name, totally illiterate, died in 1970, he was worth $1 million. $1 million. He made it in the dairy business. He milked cows. Now, I don't think that Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and Frank Rocha were failures in life, and yet all three of those, their parents would be locked up today because we've criminalized stupidity. You can't be dumb. You can't be ignorant. You can't be uneducated in America. We'll punish you. We'll throw you in jail. Can't have it. All right. Now, with that in mind, this guy, Jonas Yoder, takes his case up to the Supreme Court. And Yoder comes in to the Supreme Court, and then he makes a defense. And here's the Yoder defense. They first of all ask the question, why is it that you want us Amish people to educate our children in your public school? And the public school officials of Wisconsin said, the reason that we want your children educated is because if they're not educated, they will not fit into society. They will be outcasts. They will be fringers. They will be marginalized. They will become criminals. They will fill our insane asylums. They will be on welfare. All right, so pretty good argument. You know, the public school people, they come up and they say, my God, if you have a society of people and they're uneducated and illiterate, they will fill your insane asylums. They will fill your welfare rolls. They will be unemployed. They will become criminals. They will fill your prisons. All right. So the Amish guys came in and said, okay, we hear you. Now, we have a society of people. We call ourselves Amish, and could you please take a look at the employment rolls in Wisconsin and tell us how many Amish people do you have drawing unemployment insurance? Unemployed Amish people in Wisconsin. And by golly, they went out and they looked all over. And they just looked from top to bottom. They looked under the carpet. They looked out behind the garage. They couldn't find one single Amish person in the whole state of Wisconsin that was drawing or had ever drawn a single unemployment check. Not one. Which evidently shows that the Amish people are able to keep their people employed because there's no unemployment among the Amish people in Wisconsin. So they came back and said, now, of all of the people who have been educated in the public school system here in Wisconsin, how many of those people that are drawing unemployment checks today have been educated in public school? And they looked all over and they went out and did a survey and they asked people who were at the unemployment office and were drawing their checks, have you been to public school? And what they found out was every single one of them, without fail, every single person drawing unemployment insurance had been educated in the public school system of Wisconsin. Or if not in that public school system, they were educated in somebody else's public school system in Illinois or Iowa. Now, that ought to tell you a little something there. You know, the Amish people are farmers, and they only send their children to the eighth grade, and they don't have high school diplomas. The Amish people don't have high school diplomas, and they don't have any unemployment. So, remember, the people, the authorities in Wisconsin said, well, my God, if these people aren't educated and don't have high school diplomas and don't spend at least 2 years in high school, they're going to be marginalized. They won't be able to get employment, and then they're going to turn to crime. And so, therefore, we need to educate these people in public schools to prevent crime. That if we educate people, educated people commit fewer crimes. So, the Amish guys came back and said, okay, go around the state of Wisconsin, look in all of your prisons and jails, and report back to us and tell us how many Amish people do you have in your prisons and jails. And do you know how many they had? Zero. None. Well, except for Yoder. They arrested him because he wasn't educating his kids in public school. But he bailed out. And so by the time they did the survey, they looked around the state of Wisconsin. They didn't have any Amish bank robbers. They didn't have any Amish 7-Eleven stick-up artists. They didn't have any Amish bad check writers. But they found out that of all the people that were locked up in the prisons and jails of Wisconsin, all of them had been educated in the public school system, and that most of them had high school degrees or diplomas. Many of them had college degrees. And so they did the same thing with the insane asylums. They took a look at all of the mental institutions, and they couldn't find any Amish people in the mental institutions. And then finally, they took a look at the welfare rolls, and they said, "What? Okay. Remember, the public school official said if you don't educate these Amish kids in public school, they're going to end up on welfare." They took a look at the welfare rolls in Wisconsin. They couldn't find a single Amish person. Not one. I'm not talking about a low percentage. It couldn't even find one Amish guy on the welfare rolls. Can you believe it? Now, let's take a look at this in perspective. We have criminalized ignorance in Wisconsin. You can't be ignorant in Wisconsin. We'll lock you up. And so the Amish people, they figured, had to be the most ignorant because they weren't sending their kids to high school. And they said, well, if you don't send your kid to high school, he's going to end up on welfare, in a mental institution, unemployed, or a criminal. And when they looked, they couldn't find any criminal, couldn't find any on welfare, couldn't find any in the mental hospitals, and couldn't find any Amish guy that was unemployed. And the Supreme Court came back and said, you know, we think these Amish guys over here have achieved the ideal of society. Full employment, no mental illness. And they're just dumb as a box of rocks. I mean, these Amish people are just stupid. Try it. Go ask some Amish guy if he can find Azerbaijan on a world map. And let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, this Amish guy, he's not too good at geography, and he can't find Azerbaijan. He can't find Zimbabwe. And maybe he can't add and subtract or write his name like Frank Rocha. But if he's employed, and he's not in jail, and he's not on welfare, and you ain't got him locked up in a mental hospital someplace, then he's not costing you any money. So could you ask and answer this question? Why do you want to lock these people up and punish them and fine them? Because they're ignorant. Hell, maybe they're stupid. Not wanting to send their children to public school and get a high school diploma and send them on to college so that they can come out being engineers. You probably can't find an Amish paleontologist, archaeologist, or government bureaucrat. I'm sitting here saying, but should that be a crime? Should we lock these people up in jail? Do you want to lock up all these Amish people, spend $56 a day because they want to be ignorant? What the hell does that mean to us? Why do we even care? I don't. Now, I'd like to have a law passed that requires all Amish people to come to the Gordon Law School. I'd like to charge them a full fee. Those Amish people, they don't want to learn law. They don't want to become lawyers. They don't want to become pro se litigants. They don't want to argue their cases in court. They want to be legal illiterates. And that's bad for my business. And so what I want is a law that requires all of you people to go to law school. I tested that in the Idaho House one day. I was a lobbyist years ago. And I went in. They're trying to pass a drunk driving law. No, it was the insurance law. That's what it was. It was the compulsory insurance law. So I said, look, at that time I was a manufacturer. I was manufacturing furniture. And the people came up from San Francisco and they said, we got to have a compulsory insurance law here in the state of Idaho. We want everybody to buy auto insurance because we want everybody to be financially responsible so that when you have an accident, we don't have one of these uninsured drivers over here that doesn't pay his fair share, doesn't pay his way. And so I got up and I testified and I said, well, look, I think this is a wonderful idea. I think that we need this this insurance law. I'd like to go a step further and add an amendment to the law that requires everybody to have proof of waterbed ownership. You could just do it on the same card. You have to have proof of insurance and just put right on there proof of waterbed ownership. So that if there are any people in the state of Idaho who are driving their cars without insurance or driving their cars without proof of owning a waterbed, that they should be fined $300 and jailed for not more than 90 days. And the committee chairman thought that he had misunderstood what I said. And he asked me to repeat it, and so I repeated it. And now there's 9 members, you know, on the transportation committee, and they're all staring at me. And I said, look, people, wake up here, smell the coffee. If the insurance industry can come in here and say, we want you to lock people up if they don't buy our product. That's what compulsory insurance is, isn't it? If you don't buy our product, and if you can't produce proof that you have bought and paid for an auto insurance policy, if you haven't bought our product, we want to lock you up and put you away. And I said, well, look, I'm a businessman too, you know. And I would like you to pass a law because I think that waterbeds are good for people's backs. I think that this is good for the health, safety, and welfare of the public. I don't think people should be sleeping on hard mattresses. I think they should be sleeping on soft waterbeds. I think that this is going to improve the health, safety, and welfare of the people of the state. I think it's better for them, and I think that I'm a better judge of what a good night's sleep is than the average Joe Sixpack. After all, I'm a businessman making waterbeds, and therefore, I'm an authority. Therefore, I think that we should decide for the people of Idaho that they should all have waterbeds, and if they don't, let's lock them up! Don't you think we should lock people up that don't have waterbeds? Now, if you're sitting there saying, this guy's a lunatic, I agree. I think that passing a law that requires you to have a waterbed is lunacy, but I also think passing a law to make you buy insurance is lunacy. Or to make you buy carpet. I mean, hell, where does it stop? If you can lock people up because they don't buy insurance, why can't we lock people up because they don't have carpet or a color TV or a copy machine or they haven't bought a copy of George Bush's latest book or Bill Clinton's latest speech? Where does it end? And what's the purpose behind it? Now, I could readily understand a law that requires you to buy Hillary Clinton's latest book. I mean, I'm sure Hillary would be all in favor of it. I would be in favor of a law that requires every American to attend law school for at least 4 years. Well, hell, for at least 6 months. I mean, anything's better than nothing. Because a certain number of people would have to clamor to get into law school someplace, and I happen to have a law school over here, so I think that's great for business. And that's why we have so many regulations, boys and girls, and that's why we have so much crime, because we have criminalized just everyday garden variety activities. Like, if you don't buy insurance, we're going to lock you up. If you don't buckle your seatbelt, we're going to lock you up. If we catch you smoking dope, we're going to lock you up. Hell, if we catch you talking on the cell phone, we're going to lock you up. And I'm sure somebody has proposed a law that says if we catch you picking your nose driving down the street, we're going to lock you up. And if you don't have a nose-picking law in your state, why don't you get after your state legislators right now for the New Jersey anti-nose-picking statute? Huh? Why don't you? Now, let me show you a little something here about education. A guy by the name of David Barton, he wrote a book here on America to Pray or Not to Pray, and he pointed this out. He said, you know, Americans are kind of dumb. So they tested some students over here, basic subject matter information over here, where an environment where violence, disrespect, and immorality prevails is not conducive to learning. And there have been such declines in students' knowledge of basic academic facts that on March 17, 1986, Senator Bill Bradley moved to designate a Geography Awareness Week. A survey taken in January of that year, which had examined 5,000 high school seniors from 8 major cities on their knowledge of basic geography, had precipitated his move. Here's the results. Did you know that 25% of the students tested in Dallas, Texas, could not identify the country that borders the United States on the south? Oh my God. 25% of the students tested in Dallas, Texas, couldn't identify Mexico. Let me ask you this. Do you think that Henry Ford knew what country borders the south? Do you think that the Amish people know what country borders the southern border of the United States? What the hell difference does it make if they don't know? Henry Ford made $30 million in 1930. I don't know if he knew Mexico bordered the United States on the south or not. But who cares? Now, Bill Bradley could have just as soon come up with a new law that said, if you don't know what country borders the south, the southern border of the United States, we're going to fine you $50. Hell, they do that with your driving test. I mean, if you don't know all these rules and regulations over here, and they catch you violating one of them, they want to punish you, they want to lock you up, they want to take your license away and give you a big fine. Now, I tell you, boys and girls, you can have all the crime you want to buy. And we Americans are buying an awful lot of crime. They come to us and they make crimes out of activities that are usual, ordinary, everyday activities like talking on your cell phone. And I hardly see the logic in locking somebody up and paying $56 a day because the fool wants to talk on his cell phone driving down the street. Now, if you want to pay for it, why don't you get after it? But why don't you leave me out? Hey, we're about out of time here, so I got to remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, and please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.